All right, from Studio Live in beautiful Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm Darren Howlett, and thanks for joining us again as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley, Vancouver Island, and beyond.
Again, and we'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in and checking out what we're about to talk about. And today I think we're going to get into a little about what are the essentials in the kitchen?
We've been talking about doing this for a while. I mean, I'd really like to give a quick shout out to our sponsors first, to Butcher's Block and Ivan's Truffles and the Atlas Cafe and, of course, Studio Live and Kirsten Wood Music and everybody else that helped put this show on, put our little podcast together and support our podcast.
And our past guests for always coming on and chatting with us and telling us about their lives and how they got involved in the food industry. So
for sure. Today we're going to talk kitchen.
Kitchen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's a nice chance for the two of us to sit down and chat and
for sure
spit out some ideas. And I've been sort of, we were talking about it, how, you know, part of the reason we did this were two things, was to sort of showcase the local talent and the people in this community that are making this great food. Yeah. And the other thing, we wanted to encourage people to start cooking, you know, like to actually get your hands dirty. And,
you know, and we sort of talked about that earlier today, just broached on it. And I agree. I remember there was a time when we focused a lot more on that. And I think a lot of our efforts in trying to encourage people to get their hands dirty and get cooking, a lot of our efforts just didn't end up in the public eye. So whereas it seems to me like we have a bit of a balance, I guess, as far as what people may have seen or heard of ours, they may not have seen all of that, all right. That stuff where we were trying to help out.
We did a lot of videos.
Yeah.
We practice it. Yeah.
Don't really exist, but yeah.
They are out there. They're long.
Yeah.
There's lots of information and great facts in them, but I don't think they really got to, we never got them edited to where we thought they would be right. And there was missing sections to edit it properly. So
for sure. But I mean, this is a topic that we've bounced back and forth for well over a year, talking about doing an episode, just talking about the essentials for kitchens. Like, what do you need in your kitchen and what don't you need?
Yeah, no, exactly. And so I just went through. Actually, you know what's kind of funny? I grabbed my housekeeping step-by-step cookbook.
Yeah.
And I went through a whole bunch of my books.
When that looks like it's from the 60s, maybe the 70s?
It probably is. I'm not even going to look at the date on this. So.
All right.
But yeah, it's an old book, but I thought it was brilliant because it kind of went through and just said, hey, you know what? Here's a couple products that you should have. It's right in the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, that's it. You know, like I went through some of my older textbooks from school and stuff like that. And they were good and they had lots of stuff, but this was kind of boiling down for your sort of, they had more commercial stuff in them, I guess. So I wanted to focus on, you know, those key things that people need around the house. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, for you and for me, for completely different reasons, we both may have somewhat unconventional kitchens than others. You being that you're a professional chef and me being that I've had a few food-based businesses and, you know, we probably have a lot more than the average person has in their house.
Correct. Yes.
And probably employ, I mean, I would say that you probably employ a lot more, you put a lot more things to use that other people may have in their house that don't really use, and vice versa. You may have things that they never even thought of that are key pieces for you.
Yeah, no, that's true. And you know what? I think I've had a lot of the gimmicky things throughout my life too, that I'm like, don't need it.
Yeah. There's a couple of years ago where I trimmed right down. I'm like, you know what? Unless I actually use this on a regular basis, I don't need it in my kitchen anymore. And now I have a much more functional kitchen.
Well, a lot of things I like to think about, and a lot of people buy things for ease of convenience.
Yeah.
And I always look at something and I go, how hard is it to clean?
Yeah.
And that's really what it boils down for me.
Oh, I know.
And so that's because you're going to, when you're in the kitchen, you know, and there's nothing more disheartening than the end of a beautiful meal.
Yeah. The first thing that springs to mind for me out of pieces of kitchen equipment that I love that I don't recommend anybody has because it's purely for garnish, really, and it's impossible to clean, is my Japanese mandolin. That, I love it. I love the product that comes out of it, but it is so it's just a waste of efforts and waste of whatever. I mean, you get a nice little product out of it, but yeah, I mean that you must have some that,
well, you know, when I start looking at it, I think, and I'm flipping through a couple pages on here, mm-hmm. but I mean, a key thing is having a good knife.
Yeah.
And having the right knife for the right job.
Right.
So not just having that one knife in there,
right.
you know, having a mixture of knives. So you definitely like having a nice paring knife because mm-hmm. it's so useful. There's so many little areas from, you know, you need to chop something little, you need to peel something and, you know, it's just right there. It's nice, simple and handy. And I always have one on the cutting board, you know, close to me. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I am notoriously bad for using my French or chef's knives for everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's a bigger blade. It's a heavier blade. So you can do a little bit of meat cutting. You can do a little bit of veggie chopping. You know, it's kind of that really versatile knife that you can use for everything.
Right.
I probably use it for far more than I really should because I should break down. And
I think that's most like most people that would be listening generally use your large kitchen knife for as your multi-purpose knife to sort of do everything.
Yeah. And it's not bad just to have that one knife and have to have a good sharp knife. I mean, I can't say enough about that.
Yeah.
And I'm notoriously bad for letting my knives get dull. And then I spend hours trying to get them back up with an edge or just buy a new knife. Like that's kind of my motto on it. But yeah, definitely keeping a nice sharp knife just makes life easier for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is just having a steel.
Yeah.
And just having a quick look on how to sharpen a knife on a steel because you're just kind of, I know it doesn't sound right, but you're roughing up the knife again so that it has an edge again.
Right.
So you're kind of putting some burrs back on there so it gives it that little bit of a sawing action when you want to chop into something and cut again. So that's an important thing I'd like to say you need to have. What's the other two knives that I would say definitely you should look at as a boning knife?
All right.
And now this is if you're getting up into cleaning anything.
Like, dressing any animals?
Dressing any animals, getting into proteins. And I always say you don't want flex in there.
Right.
Because that's going to cut you.
Yeah.
You want a really solid, thin knife that you can churn and roll around in there. But you can put a bit of pressure on. It's not going to bend and not going to give. So it'll cut through your...
I think I've owned mine for 20 years and only started using it about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it just, but absolutely it's got that flex and it's got that maneuverability.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. And you don't need as much flex, like I'm saying, having a knife that's solid so that it's not going to slip and roll on you.
Right.
So, and there's nothing worse than that. And that's what part of having a sharp knife is that you have something that can actually cut through and you're not going to have to apply as much pressure because it's when you're getting a dull knife and putting the more pressure on, that's when you're going to have a little bit of an accident.
Right.
Everyone likes their fingers.
And what about a serrated knife? Does that fit in your list?
I definitely would say a serrated knife is always a good one.
Yeah.
Reliable bread knife.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to hack to piece a nice loaf of bread, you know, like a nice French loaf or something with a chef's knife. So if you had something with a little bit of serrated, it'll cut through.
Yeah.
Also sometimes a slight serrated with tomatoes or something like that.
Yeah.
It just cuts through the skin and breaks it nice and quick.
Yeah.
I know we've sort of all converted to this serrated utility knife at Atlas.
Yeah,
The so-called Atlas knife, which is, what is it, 7-inch? No, it's not even that.
I think it's about 6-inch.
Six, seven-inch
blade
with a slight serrate on it.
Yeah.
It does have a bit of a curve to the one side, so you will notice that it does slice a little bit to one side. But we just find it work. It's such a great utility knife that you can cut a tomato at 1 second and turn around and cut a quesadilla at the next second.
True.
So
yeah,
it's kind of a nice versatile knife on that. But I mean, nothing beats having a nice bread serrated knife to get you through some of those things too. So
yeah. And jumping from knives, what else do you think is key?
Well, you know what? Let's talk pots because I've been really getting into pots lately.
Okay,
and
sure.
I am a heavy fan now of cast iron.
Yeah.
And I've actually got a press steel pan, which is amazing because it's a little bit lighter, but it seems to have a much balanced heat on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been getting into induction burners. So that's something that most people don't have at home or have never heard about.
Right.
Or the ones that have, they kind of understand it. It's a bit of a different principle is that you're heating up the pan, not the surface.
Right.
So a lot of your traditional stoves, you're heating up the surface.
And then by contact with the pan to the surface
you're heating it up. Whereas with an induction burner, you're actually physically heating up the pan.
Heating
the
pan, right.
So the induction directly. Is cool. Yeah, there are some pros and cons of that.
Yep.
It is sort of a radio wave, sort of like a microwave sort of system.
Right.
But I don't know, for boiling water or doing stuff really quick, it's amazing to see how fast it heats up the water. But on that same thing, I'm going to a heavy base pan. And I don't think this is, that's why I'm falling in love with cast iron again.
Right.
I don't know why I got away from it, you know. Yeah. I think I fell victim, like a lot of people, to a nonstick pan and then realized that.
I still don't know the validity of it or not, but I remember about 15 years ago, my mom, she was determined that nonstick pans were damaging to her health, and she was undergoing very serious health issues. And she just asked us as a favor to her, she's like, "Can you just throw away, get rid of all your nonstick?" Mm-hmm. And so I haven't used nonstick pan in like 15 years. I forget really what they're about. I don't even remember how to use them if I had come across them. But I've lately been really wishing I still had a nonstick pan just because for sake of ease,
like just
for cleanup. But I've been 100% aluminum and cast iron for 15 years now. So
And there's nothing wrong with an aluminum pan.
Yeah.
I definitely prefer more of a steel pan with a little bit more weight and a little heaviness.
Yep.
Aluminum pan's nice and light and quick to heat up. So it does work really well.
The one thing I'm missing right now, the one thing that my kitchen lacks, which is very rare that my kitchen's lacking anything, is I don't have a soup pot. I have a large pasta pot.
Right.
And it's just doesn't fill my need. It's not enough space. I need the volume that a soup pot. So I guess I'm on the hunt for one right now. And if anybody has one out there that they were looking to part with, of course I'm interested. But that seems to be the only failing I have right now. I mean, back last year when we had a business together, we were making lots of soups. And I haven't made soup since then. And I've been keen to because I got all this new knowledge from working beside you.
Well, and just be careful because we were making big batches of soup there. Suppose. So it could be a little difficulty for you at home to be I need 20 friends to come over and have soup with me. So,
hey kids, we have 16 liters of soup to get through.
Let's do this. But no, having a nice big pot is always a good. And you know what? Like, I always find it's almost a safety issue for me too. Because, you know, if you fill up your pot too much, you're going to boil over, you're going to have those issues. So having the bigger pot, you know, it's especially like if you're boiling pasta or whatever, you want a violent boil on it.
Right.
Having that edge up there gives you a bit of safety and you know, a little less concern of spillage or boil over as such. So, I would actually like to say, go back to that nonstick thing. I have found myself, and I do this at work we use quite a bit of aluminum pans there.
Right.
But we, just heating up the pan and we're using gas, of course, but heating that pan up, hitting it with oil and then letting it cool down just a little bit kind of seasons your pan and gives it almost having that oil in there kind of seals everything. So you don't get that stick to it.
Right.
So I've found like doing scrambled eggs and stuff like that, as long as I get the pan hot, just about to that point of smoking and then turn it right down.
Oh, interesting.
With the oil in it, that it kind of seasons it a little bit better. And then I can hit it with the eggs.
Right.
After I bring the heat back up again. So
interesting. I might have to fool around with that then. Because I always go super low temperature because I like my eggs to be really light, like fluffy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I find I can get that with a really low temperature over time, just constant movement.
Just that constant movement. Yeah.
So,
notice sometimes you'll throw those eggs down then they'll start sticking to the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. That's what I'm faced with.
So. Yeah. So I'm saying like bring that temperature up and then drop it down just to seal it. And that's part of like seasoning a good pan is like I remember in the old days taking big bags of salt and throwing them in there.
Yeah.
And just polishing these cast iron frying pans on super high heat too.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I still use cast iron for most everything. And I season my pans every fourth or fifth use. I give it another quick little season just when I start to see that seal.
Exactly. And that's kind of my things with that. I want to measuring.
Yeah.
Cups, spoons,
you threw that at me earlier when I said, what kind of things are we going to talk about? And you said, we should talk about measuring cups. I didn't know where you were going with this. I thought, are they not self-evident?
Well, no, but I'm saying like I like to have a nice deep in cup for doing liquid measurements.
Oh yeah.
Just finding that volume. Mm-hmm. If it's a broad one, it's not as easy. I like glass so you can sort of see the level.
Right.
You know, I have those kind of, those little things. And buying a little bit a heavier quality one.
Right.
I mean, you can buy pretty cheap measuring cups and measuring spoons. And they will do. But I'm just saying, if you want to have longevity and you want something you want to take care of.
Right. That's something you're going to use forever anyways.
Ever and ever. And you know what? Like just scraping the top just to get your right balances, like on a a teaspoon and stuff like that. Especially if you're doing baking, it gives you a little bit more control over how much product you have in there. So
Yeah, I see that for sure.
I've always said, thought that that's one that we should always think about.
Yeah.
The other thing too, I think a lot of people would make their lives a lot easier is investing in a little scale.
Yes. You again, yet another thing that I always wished I'd had and only picked up a couple of years ago. But out of necessity, I had to for what I was doing. And now it never leaves my kitchen. I don't actually put it away. I have my scale out. And not because I'm in any way, you know, trying to control my diet or whatever. But quite often, I'll realize that what I eyeball as an amount, I have no idea what that actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give it a quick weigh. Now I know what I'm looking at. Then I can look through a cookbook or I can look through a baking recipe. And I, you know, I now know visually what all those amounts look like in all those different products.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's it. Baking is one of those things that is, it's a science. Mm-hmm. It's baking recipes are in commercial bakeries or formulas. They're not, they're not recipes. So they're, you're done. You do them by weights because, you know, a cup of flour can be two different, completely different weights. Cause just think you fill up a cup of flour and you tap it three or four times and it drops down that
you're getting
half an inch or whatever, you know, that may be a bit much, but
No, but I guess I know exactly what you mean. And it, when you're, I mean, to me, cooking, especially freeform cooking is more like art and whereas baking is definitely science. And yeah, you need to be accurate. And so to be accurate, you need to have all those tools that measure accuracy, right? The measuring cups, the scale, the everything.
For sure.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on cutting boards?
I think we actually talked about this once maybe, and I am absolutely 100% against plastic. And not for any other reason than I just prefer wood. And I had this crazy theory, and yeah, you can call me a nut or whatever, but I had this crazy theory probably 20 some odd years ago when I was deep into woodworking. It used to be one of my favorite hobbies, and we were talking. I remember my teacher was incredibly wise, and he kept telling me about the acidity of the wood and how the wood would remain that way forever. And I was like, well, that's probably why we use wooden cutting boards, because they don't allow bacterial growth. They don't allow for it to remain. And if you go, you were probably in my house today, you've seen, I've got like 13 or 15 wooden cutting boards that I have. They all do different things. I do, you know, my garlics and onions and whatever are on one, my meats are on others, but I try to keep it all separate. But yeah. Anyways, I thought I was crazy and I kept my theory to myself. And then I watched a thing about it where they were saying, yeah, if you use plastic and you're not diligent about cleaning it, you actually could be spreading germs because it's not getting killed off. It's just sitting on a surface. And when you wash it, it's still around. Whereas by using a wooden cutting board, proper wooden cutting board, you could be contributing to killing bacteria.
Yeah.
It's not a guarantee.
Yeah. I mean, there's two thoughts on it. Definitely. And I know the health board has flipped back and forth about that. Wood, yes. Plastic, no. Plastic is easier. Mm-hmm. It is, especially now when you get color-coded cutting boards like we use them at work quite a bit.
A lot of people out there might not know that. There's a full color-coding system that's sort of recognized by restaurants. You get your red board, your white board, your blue board, your green board, and is there one I'm missing?
Oh, there's all the colors of the rainbow.
Yeah.
Yellow.
But they they all mean things.
Yeah. And it's sort of like kitchens change, but a lot of the times it's like your red board will be for your meats. Mm-hmm. Your yellow boards will be for your poultry and stuff like that.
Right.
If you go into, what do we, I'm trying to think back how we always do it. Green for vegetables. Right. We do blue for fish. So it kind of, you keep this, you can separate your right. cutting board. So you have a bit of a, you know, you can pick which one.
Right.
Or you know what's been on there beforehand. So you can right. maybe take a little bit more care, like a chicken board. Maybe that's something we should put a little bit more sanitizer, put a better right. scrub on. So.
And not only that, but the taste transfer too. Like I was saying, like if you don't watch what you're cutting your garlic and onions on, you're going to transfer to other things after cleaning.
I've done this and it's a foolish thing of chopping onions and then chopping fruit.
Like, yeah, oh my God.
And
then
it's
you have watermelon that tastes like dirty feet or something.
Yeah, yeah. You got like, yummy onion on my watermelon. So,
yeah.
I mean, I've done it. Everyone in a kitchen's probably done it at some time and just not thinking or giving your knife a quick wipe instead of actually cleaning it really well. Not something I'm proud of, but yeah, it does. there is a flavor transfer for sure. So,
right.
So I still at home am a pretty big wood cutting board.
Yeah.
You definitely have to take more time and treat your cutting boards right. Get them a really good scrub, really good bleach. And then you have to oil them too to keep them from cracking and that. So for convenience, plastic, being traditional.
Yeah.
And just loving wood. That's kind of where I stick with wood ones. So I'm trying to think of some great other equipment.
What about, is there anything that you can think of that like in specific that people don't need? Or is it just generally like, I know from just being in your kitchen, the things that you generally have and don't have, but can you summarize that?
Oh, I really wish I could. There's some things that are just gimmicky things that have one use only.
Right. And that's exactly what I've gotten rid of. I had an apple corer.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've used this once and yet it's occupied this much space in my kitchen for years.
Yeah. I have a knife. Gone. I can cut that. Garlic presses.
Yes.
And I'm not going to knock it because my father has been religious about his garlic press for his entire life and it works great for him.
Right.
The unfortunate bit is I was the one who usually had to clean it after a dinner and stuff like that. So I've always,
that's probably why I've never owned one is because that was traditionally my job is clean, do the dishes after. And I'm like, I hate this thing.
And you get stuck with a toothpick there and you're like,
I'm never going to own one of these things.
I remember we bought one that had this little red thing with knobs that you pushed on the top, but then you'd spend half an hour looking for that through the drawers. So,
I just chop my garlic now.
Yeah. You know, another good thing, some things I could live without or couldn't live without would be like a timer.
Oh,
and not even people don't even think about that, but
I didn't.
Yeah. I don't trust myself. I get sidetracked quite easy. So I've definitely found myself to be a timer by myself. A good meat thermometer is an excellent one. They're pretty inexpensive nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a digital one or one that a handheld one. Mm-hmm. I'm not big on the ones with a cord that you stick around the corner and stick in the oven. And you should check it a couple places, you know, like I'm not always the first time I jab it in there. I'm like, oh, that's well done. And I'm like, oh, wait, it's raw over here. So
no, I agree. I definitely, a meat thermometer is great. My life changed after I got one. And to add to that, if you are into baking at all or you do any, I've found is I have a candy thermometer and I didn't have one until a couple of years ago. And then I picked one up and again, any of that stuff now is so much easier when I know I hit that exact temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I try and carry a meat thermometer or a thermometer on myself at work all day long, you know, because it's that for me, I'm hitting sauce.
Right.
I can turn around and be like, okay, I've got my temperatures. I don't have to worry about that. So.
Right. Yeah.
But even at the home, it's not, you know, if you ever have that little concern about a chicken breast not being warm enough or, you know, like, boom, hit it there, you know it.
You know, and speaking of which, I know this is a bit of a tangent, but I think the one thing is that now that we're eating healthier chicken, I would say that by and large, we're eating healthier chicken. You know, we're not everyone's buying store processed chicken. And generally what you've always looked for is if, you know, you cut into the chicken, then there's that tiny bit of pink. You're like, ooh, you know, that's dangerous. But the thing is, like, good, healthy, organic chickens, even when cooked, you're going to get a tiny little pinkish hue. And I think that that's, you know, I now see people overcooking their good quality chicken because they think that they got to get it to that. So there's a great place where if you have a thermometer, you're going to know exactly that you're in a safe zone and you're not going to have to overcook that beautiful chicken.
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Trying to think of other things. You know, one thing I can't live without now, and this is maybe just is a food processor.
Right. I use mine way more than I ever did in the past. I use it for so many things now.
Yeah.
But I've also gotten more into making my own dressings and sauces, and I make my own, like breadcrumb blends to roll things. So like I've just found more uses for
Sometimes I'm shucking oysters at home and I'm just blitzing ice in there to put, cause I put raw oysters on fresh ice. Like that's the way to go.
Interesting. I've never thought to use it for that.
Yeah. We beat the hell out of the one at work. I love it. what's the other one? You know, here's a blender.
Yeah.
And not just to make the margaritas at this, but, I've actually, like doing a lot of, vinaigrettes and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, you can emulsify it really well in there. The other thing I'm kind of getting away from blenders, but emulsion blenders. Right. So a handheld blender.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of changed the way I do a lot of things, and it's changed a lot of way kitchens do things because now you can do, you know, you cook all your sauce or make a soup or whatever, and you can do a nice pureed soup really easy without having to go through all the mess of transferring it into your blender or transferring it into your food processor. You can just hit it right there.
Yeah.
I also, for vinaigrettes, I mean, like, I really have that cup that came with it. It's all measured. I just throw stuff in there.
I know, that's beautiful.
Spice, and I just drop it in there and start pouring oil, and it's just like, I got a vinaigrette in like 30 seconds. So
yeah, it's true for sure.
It's a great way to go. And you don't need to buy these expensive vinaigrettes from, not that I'm knocking them. Like there's some great flavors out there, but I'm saying if you want something light, quick and easy, boom, you've got it right there. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, I would say to go in that sort of mixing tool to take the next step, I would say one of my most indispensable, and I think it's up to every home, whether it has value in your home or not. I mean, everybody eats differently and in a different way, but indispensable tool for me is definitely my, my mixer, like my KitchenAid.
KitchenAid. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I make all my breads and doughs. Like I mix everything in it. I do an average amount of baking, and that always comes into play. Yeah. And then I rarely use it for wet purposes. And mostly it's for my baking and for breads, but because I bought the sausage making attachment.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So now it's got way more value for me. Like I do a lot more things with it.
Well, and definitely like KitchenAids are great. And I think it's a lot of the attachments that are wonderful that go along with it. Well, it's having a nice mixing bowl. Not that there isn't other companies out there that make equivalent products as mixers, you know?
Yeah.
But I've definitely used the KitchenAid one a lot in restaurants and not that they say not for commercial use.
Right.
Gone through a few of them over the years. I've used other products and they all work around the same, but just having those little attachments. And I was going to say like a good grater.
Right.
I know one of my favorite was having the attachment for the grater attachment on my KitchenAid for like doing cheese and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
But you know, you don't need that because, you know, having a good quality box grater,
right,
which you can do so many little things with there, from just a quick zest on something.
Yeah.
And,
I've actually moved away from my box grater. I have a microplane and I do my zesting or really like small, hard cheeses or whatever on that. It's got two sides to it, so it's got a thicker and a thinner. And then, generally I do the rest out of my.
So you've got me on my tangent right there, because I was just going straight for the microplane, because I think that's really changed it. Yeah. I would recommend going out and just buying a nice, simple microplane.
I know. And that's, I would absolutely, like, I think, again, it's a standard, it's a no-brainer for a kitchen, like for a commercial kitchen, like a restaurant. Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of those things, you know, that people don't realize that can put their dish over the top is, well, if you're supposed to put some lemon juice in there and you just take the zest of the lemon as well and add that in, like you just intensify the flavor, you know, tenfold. And
Well, and the trick with the microplane is that you don't pick up the pulp, right?
Right.
So you don't get that bitter. You just get that citrusy flavor from it. Yeah. So it makes it wonderful for stuff like that. I also find like fresh nutmeg.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. Like I've got a nutmeg grater, but I hate it. I'm like, I just hit the microplane.
Same.
And it's just, it's quick and easy. Probably kills the blades on the microplane, but they seem to last for quite a while. So
yeah.
It's definitely one of those pieces of equipment I definitely pick up. Good old potato peeler too.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't go wrong with them. I mean, they're very, I don't know, I'd say that's an integral piece for sure.
Yeah, I have fallen in love with the Y ones.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why. And it's not just for peeling a potato or a carrot and taking the skin off, but I mean, I peel zucchinis and I'll make that into a pasta, or I'll peel the carrots and do like little curls with those and throw them onto a salad or something like that. So you have that versatile. You can take really thin slices of stuff and add it to a salad, like a nice fresh beet.
Right.
You know, you can add that in there and then it's got that nice taste and it's not like that big chunk you got to chew through.
Right.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
And you don't really need any knife skills to pull that off either.
No, so you just need to know how to peel something.
Yeah.
As soon as you can, if you can run that along that vegetable, then you're
there. Pretty much got it. So like cucumbers, you know, all those sort of things, you can just peel them off and get nice product out of it. So
yeah. Interesting. Nothing to really shy people away from.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to say, and I haven't talked on it yet, and I was just looking at it, was like the old carving fork.
Mm.
And I think it's much more important to have a good pair of tongs.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are indispensable.
You won't walk into a kitchen.
Someone was at my house for dinner the other day and I had just put a pair of sort of soiled tongs into the sink. And they said, "Oh, do you need another pair of tongs?" Because I was reaching for one. "Do you have another pair of tongs?" And my son piped up. He's like, "There's 8 of them right there." It's true. I've overdone it. I have like a drawer full of tongs because they sort of replace your hands when you've got a lot going on. You can pick up bands, but you can turn everything. You know what I mean? You can do everything that your hand can do.
In a kitchen, it's kind of it's my hand.
Yeah. It's an extension of your hand.
It is an extension of my hand and it can handle a little bit more heat.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
And so it's great to be able to grab a pan, to pass that, to plate something. I'm trying to work myself into the, what am I even thinking of? Little tongs. Pinchers or whatever, you know, like, and that's a little bit more higher end. I don't think it's something you need in your home kitchen, but just a pair of tweezers is what I'm looking for.
Right.
So that you can pick things and delicately place them without bruising vegetables. And, you know, especially if you're working with like flower petals or something like that, you can plate them on a plate really nice, but not something for a first timer.
No.
I don't think you need to invest in anything like that, but a good set of tongs that are, I would say full metal.
Yeah.
I've got a plastic.
The hybrid?
Hybrid, half and half.
I have one that has, that like anti-slip plastic inserts so that it holds grip better. But I actually find that those slip out often when I don't want them to fail me.
Yeah. So that's a product.
They're more of a danger.
Yeah. Just get a nice set of stainless steel.
And there's really cheap, thin metal ones out there that I really don't recommend.
Yeah, if you can grab the end and twist it.
It is going to fail you.
It will fail. Yeah. Yeah. Anything you can twist with your hand is not. And I've picked them up that if it.
Yeah.
I've also found the locking ones can be a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I usually disconnect the locking mechanism right away.
Yeah.
Just get rid of it.
Yeah. No, yeah. I got into a use of having that point to the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then go do stuff.
Right. Yeah. Wow, who knew I'd laugh about tongs today?
True enough. Well, I think we gave a bit for people to think about.
Yeah,
I like
the idea of coming back to this, though. I mean, we could talk about other kitchen equipment, too.
I think it would be fun just to head back and we can just hit individual and maybe go into more depth into each one. But we'd love to hear from you out there, some of our listeners, if you want to just send us a little email or you can email us at theediblevalley.com or just put something up on Facebook or something along those lines. And just tell us maybe one of those essential items that you find that you need in your kitchen that you could live without or couldn't live without.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I'm just going to finish off with one more that no one even really thinks about, but a good kitchen cloth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about how that's like the lifeblood of the restaurant. you guys come to a screeching halt when we're out of cloths.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, having a good cloth in hand and being prepared for that, and it lets you grab stuff.
No, absolutely agree.
Yeah. I'm not a big oven mitt kind of guy, so I'm going to go good thick kitchen cloth. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that note, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, the Butcher's Block in Courtney, where you can find the finest meats and poultry and other local products. There's the Atlas Cafe, serving fresh local food in the heart of downtown Courtney. We have Ivan's Truffles, Ivan's handmade decadent chocolates, Kirsten Wood Music, private music lessons with heart, and Studio Live in Cumberland, where you can always find an upcoming show with some of Canada's and the world's greatest musicians in the perfectly intimate setting. We also want to add to this list westcoastprovisions.com, just because they've been diligent in promoting us, and many thanks to West Coast Provisions. Yeah, and if you want to hear your name in this list of sponsors or see it on our Facebook page or website or any of our posters around town and special events, get in touch with us and we can add you for very little per month.
And if you're out there, we'd love for you just to send us any comments or at least subscribe. Follow us on our Podbean site. Definitely we're on iTunes. You can check us out there and write us a nice review. We'd love to hear from you, whatever you have to say. And if you know someone out there that is in this area and is looking to promote their business and want to talk a little bit about how they got into the food industry and what they're doing in it, we would love to hear from them. And we're sending a little call out to all farmers, chefs, cooks, food producers out there, anyone, foragers. We'd just love to have you come in and chat with us and tell us your story. All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.